You've heard me talk about my dog Tucker a lot on this podcast, and it's hard to imagine our family now without the joy that this little field spaniel has brought to our daily lives. That's when we were approached about advertising Superfood Complete on the show, and I said, well, yes, of course. Actress Katherine Heigl has helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, and she is seeing more and more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Dogs across America, just like my dog Tucker, are trying Superfood Complete and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to BadlandsRanch.com/Zabe and order right now to get up to 50% off your regularly priced order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience these incredible things, go to BadlandsRanch.com. That's BadlandsRanch.com/Zabe today. Summer concert season is almost upon us, and if you're heading out to a country show, it'll be all about the boots. With seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more, Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and a friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there is no in-store experience quite like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit Tecovas.com. That's Tecovas.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and they ship right to your door. Go to Tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today. Today on the Zabecast, what have I told you? Every player on every NFL team was suddenly available. How would a hypothetical all-team expansion draft look? And would it be awesome or super awesome if we did it? Ron Thomas joins me to talk golf, life, Indy 500, and more. Plus, your Rona roundup with a stunning admission from the WHO. Your daily Kickstarter of Uncensored Me is locked and loaded, so buckle up and let's go.
Here we go.
Tuesday, June 9, 2020. Thank you for joining me. Well, the owners have come back to the players in baseball with the following offer. After the first offer, which was 82 games at a sliding scale that approximated about 33% of what players on paper were due to be owed. Then after 50 games at prorated pay, that turned out to be about 33% of what players would have gotten paid. And now the third offering from the owners, at least on a season, is 76 games at 75% prorated pay, which equals about 33% of what they were going to make. It all keeps coming back to the same place. Baseball keeps making the same offer in different forms. However, as someone put it pithily on Twitter, you have to give credit to Major League Baseball for conceding from their initial offer of 6 of 1 and now offering half a dozen of the other. I would say, Grover, we are still far from a deal.
This is near.
Which we are not.
This is far.
Thank you, Grover. ESPN did something I've talked about for years now, which is a hypothetical expansion draft in the NFL. All players released from contracts and names put in, you know, teams put into a hat, you shake them up, pull them out, there's the order. Who would get picked where? You have to account for a lot of factors. Not only age, but injury history, positional importance, et cetera, et cetera. Obviously, quarterbacks would go first. But after that, how quickly would teams move off of the top-tier quarterbacks to someone else? And give it a hypothetical, you've got this player for 3 years or maybe 5 years, depending on how long of a time frame you'd like to make. ESPN's panel, which was part of their NFL Live crew, and I didn't get the names of who was on this, They did this. They did a draft on this. And using this year's draft order, the hypothetical expansion draft would have Patrick Mahomes go 1-1 to Cincinnati. No shock there. Russell Wilson second to the Redskins. And then Lamar Jackson number three to Detroit. Lamar, probably the more devastating impact player last year, but our team's going to figure him out just a bit next season. Then Deshaun Watson to the Giants at four. Aaron Donald, the first non-quarterback at five to Miami. Ronnie Stanley, the O-tackle to the Chargers at six. Then Joey Bosa to Carolina. Drew Brees to Arizona at eight, which is ridiculous because he's a one-year guy. And then you've got Dak Prescott to Jacksonville, too high. Nick Bosa to Cleveland, too low. Carson Wentz to the Jets, too low. Aaron Rodgers to Vegas at 12, way too low. Joe Burrow to Indy at 13, too much of a roll of the dice. He's an unproven commodity. Tampa Bay at 14, taking Tom Brady. That one is just stupid because, oh, he's already there. And he's a one-year rental like Breeze. Denver taking Drew Locke at 15. Get the fuck out of here. They already got Drew Locke. And total unproven prospect. I mean, a good half of a season, basically, last year, and that's it. Atlanta taking Matt Ryan. I don't know why they had these teams taking their old players. But okay, whatever. I guess there is value in that because you don't have to teach the guy the system again. Kyler Murray to Dallas at 17. Teddy Bridgewater, 18 to Pittsburgh. No fucking way. Jimmy Garoppolo to Chicago at 19. Christian McCaffrey to the Rams at 20. Baker Mayfield at 21 to Philly. Way too high. Michael Thomas to Buffalo at 22. Way too low. Sam Darnold to New England at 23. I don't see it. Khalil Mack to New Orleans at 24. And then Ryan Tannehill, too high. DeAndre Hopkins, too low. Mike Evans to Seattle, eh. Matt Stafford to Baltimore at 28. Tyreek Hill to Tennessee. Tua Tagovailoa to the Packers at 30. George Kittle back to the Niners at 31. And Stephon Gilmore at 32. There's an interesting discussion to have about all of this. If teams had to assess, well, we like this guy in our system and we know what he's about. So if he's available, let's go ahead and take him again. I think there's too much reaches in here in terms of quarterbacks that you think are going to be good. You don't have to draft a Bridgewater in a hypothetical expansion draft 18. Pittsburgh would be way better off taking a Michael Thomas or a DeAndre Hopkins or even a Tyreek Hill and then backfilling with a similar caliber quarterback in the second round. Either way, can you imagine how awesome the NFL would be if it was like fantasy football and every player was available to be redrafted? That there were two drafts, there was a rookie draft, and there was a expansion draft. Instead of free agency, an expansion draft every year. The players would hate it because they want to put down roots in a city, and they want to build their brand and get identified with where they're at and do good works in the community like Drew Brees, and then have all that forgotten the instant you say one thing that is one inch out of line from the current political correctness. Right, Drew Brees? It would be so much fun because your team every year would have a chance at getting somebody awesome. And yeah, I know, coach and system, coach and system, coach and system. It takes years to build that up. I'd still like to see it, though. It would make the league fun. And yeah, you'd sell a lot of jerseys. Every year, if your favorite player is Lamar Jackson, guess what? He's probably going to a different team. And look, these guys can live in whatever city they want to live. They just have to go work in their NFL city for 5 months out of the year. It's not that hard. I say let's do it. Absolutely. Okay, couple of things before we get to Ronnie. And I'll save the Jim Nantz story for later. I'm scrolling up here to make sure I'm not missing something. That was the same. This one. God, boy, I got to get this tab system down because it's not quite what I thought. Oh, yeah. Major League Baseball is finally admitting Angel Hernandez is a terrible umpire. This story by Ryan Phillips in The Big Lead. Apparently, Major League Baseball was doing an investigation into just how horseshit bad Angel Hernandez is and was as an umpire, and continues to be. And apparently Hernandez was eavesdropping on the investigation into his conduct. This according to a story by Daniel Kaplan in The Athletic. On July 24th, 2017, there was confusion and a 14-minute delay in a game involving the Rays and the Red Sox. The problem came when the Rays moved pitcher Adam Kolarik to first base. When the pitcher moves to a defensive position, the team moving him loses its DH. Apparently, Hernandez had to be reminded of that rule by his crew, and he screwed up another ruling concerning the batting order. Obviously, after that embarrassing screw-up, MLB launched an investigation. It interviewed all members of the umpire and crew separately via telephone. When it came time for Hernandez to hang up, and for fellow umpire Ed Hickox to be interviewed, Hernandez allegedly didn't hang up and instead listened in after expressly being told not to. If this wasn't more reason to fire this dick, I have no idea why they don't. Probably can't because of the union. Headline, Jeff Bezos would now be worth $200 billion if he hadn't divorced. Yeah, but he's a lot happier, and he's got a lot sportier girlfriend. Yes, he cut a check to his ex for a whole lot of money, Mackenzie Bezos. Let's see. Bezos gave her his divorce settlement, saw her walk away with nearly 20 million shares of Amazon, which at the time were valued at $38 billion. A report last month projected Bezos would be on track to become the world's first trillionaire by 2026. The world's top billionaires have added more than $420 billion to their net worth since the start of the pandemic. Wow. The rich are getting richer. Stock market up 9,000 points since the low watermark in March. Amazing. Good thing I listened to my financial advisor. Said it's going to be rocky, but you just got to hang in there. And there were times in which I said, God damn it. What the fuck didn't you tell me that this would be the... We need to sell shit. Sell. Good thing I listened to him. Probably should have bought more. Didn't have the balls to do it. Oh, well. Next pandemic, right? Let's talk to my man, Ron Thomas. Got some stuff on Indy and more.
Hello, Steven.
Ladies and gentlemen, the master of the dove hook, according to our friend Bryant Hatcher. Not the duck hook, the dove hook. D-O-V-E. Man, Ronnie, you hit that. What is he? Does he call you Ronnie?
Yep.
Ronnie, you dove hit that hook. Hit that dove.
Thomas,
you hit that dove hook. Hatch is one of the invaluable characters on our golf trip to Pinehurst where, you know, the day he doesn't come is a sad day because he adds such flavor to the event, doesn't he?
Totally. He'll always be there.
Yeah. We call him Tidwell. He played football at Cincinnati, played briefly in the Canadian Football League, and he's got a chirpy, cocky attitude, sort of like Rod Tidwell. But the great thing about Hatch as a golfer is... never gets mad. He has the best, doesn't give a fuck, for the most part, about golf I've ever seen. Wouldn't you agree?
He really does. He, you know what's funny? He's the only brother on the trip, which I love and I admire a great deal.
I wouldn't mind more brothers, you know. Oh, we're totally, all brothers totally. In arms, you know. But yeah, we'll take more. But he is the one. And I keep threatening to go on his golf trip where I say, can I be the token white guy on the trip? And he laughs. He goes, there's plenty of white guys. But there are more brothers on the trip. I'm like, I want in on that trip.
Oh, yeah. You know what's funny also is I had a talk with Chick Hernandez. I played golf with Chick a couple weeks ago.
How is
And he asked
Chick?
About the – yeah, he's well. He's well. He wants to come on our golf show a lot, and he wants to come on your podcast.
Okay.
But I talked to him about the Pinehurst trip, and he said who went. I told him Hatcher was there. He reiterated the story about Rocky Gap, the playoff.
Okay, so here's the story. Potomac Cup Golf Tournament, this was 2002 or 3, early on, and it's Maryland versus Virginia, amateur event. It's a competitive event. You have to qualify to be in it. You know, you're playing for your state. You're playing for pride. We're playing Rocky Gap Golf Course in Western Maryland. It has a hole, number 15, which I think is one of the great weird holes I've ever seen in my life. It goes straight uphill, par 5. It's tucked against I-70 as the trucks come steaming down this steep incline and they hit their air brakes. There's a huge, a 30-foot hill of nothing but jungle grass and kudzu and death. You know, you couldn't find your ball in there if you were Lassie, and it was a ball wrapped in bacon, okay? So it's death to the right, 30-foot wall of shit straight up to the highway. And on the left side of the hole is a drainage channel about 10 feet deep with large boulders in it and weeds all over the place, which I forgot what I named the hazard. It was something vagina because it was like a big old nasty wound. And if you hit it left, it also was dead. Now, the hole starts somewhat wide and narrows the further uphill it goes. All right. Have I done a good job of describing it so
yes,
far?
Yes, perfect. Keep going.
Okay. So it's par five. So you can hit driver, but you better be have steady nerves. Well, it's Hatcher versus Chick Hernandez. And Hatcher hits one left into the devil's vulva, hits one right into the gunch up the hillside, and finally hits one into play. So he's hitting one, two, three, four. He's lying five.
Yes.
Lying five in the fairway. Well, Chick then plinks one into play just with a five iron.
He hit a five iron. That's what he said. He almost missed it, he said. Just a little toe job out into the middle, like a 120-yard five iron.
Didn't matter. Plinks it into the fairway. Chick proceeds to plink, plink, plink up the hill very cautiously while Hatcher is rallying after hitting two out of bounds or two lost. It comes down to a short putt for Chick to win the hole, and Chick gacks it. And I hear Hatcher, not in a mean way, but just because he appreciates how stupid and absurd the game of golf is, Hatcher lets out this cackle that echoes into this canyon between the 15th green and the 16th tee. And I'm over there watching it. And I know how hot Chick can run on the golf course, like we all can. And I'm thinking, oh my God, Hatcher is about to have a putter buried in his forehead. And I'm going to have a guy die on my trip.
They made nine.
They have the hole with the nine.
With the nine.
And Hatcher was like, ah, you missed it.
Four of those. Yep. So
anyway, yeah. God bless golf. Golf is a wonderful game. It's maddening. It's crazy. It's fun. But there you go.
I know it's been a while, but I haven't gotten to talk to you on here. But just briefly, it's just another great trip. And, you know, growing up in Indiana, as I always reference, I thought Indiana people were the nicest people that I had ever met. I think Wisconsin folks might have them edged out or at least a tie.
They're good, man. The Wisconsin Mafia is good. We got four guys. My boy Big Mikey brought three of his goons from their public league courses. A couple of them belonged to clubs, and they were the easiest fit, you know. Never once said one word of complaint about anything. We're never late. We're quick to their wallet to pay for something and got along so well.
Perfectly. Just really solid people. And, you know, being a Midwesterner, I think that a lot of people out east or maybe out west think that we're just a little bit behind and we're maybe just not not going to say smart, but up to date on things.
East Coast bias is real.
Yeah.
The notion of East Coast elites in the Acela corridor is real. D.C., Philly, although maybe not Philly, savages. D.C., right. New York, Boston. I mean, that's all real. You know, the East Coast elite is real. I'm not saying there's not good people in the East Coast, but the East Coast vibrates at a different frequency than the Midwest. It just does.
It does. But these guys just, I'll put them up against anybody in any kind of discussion about politics, about life, about relationships. The story about the one gentleman, which I know we won't go into. This doesn't have anything to do with smarts or this and that, but the story, how you introduced him. The best thing about the trip for me, besides meeting all the guys, is when you have the microphone the first night and you introduce everybody. And the story about our boy, Billy.
You won the championship with. I told the story. He basically left his bride, not quite at the altar, but he definitely pulled the plug on getting married to this one woman after they had already sent the invites out, which I like. Yep. And it's like a Costanza situation, you know, when his fiance died licking the envelopes.
Oh yeah.
And you know, he takes it in stride, but it turns out it was the best thing because, and it was actually his mother. His mother came into his one friend Daryl's workplace and said, "I got to talk to, you know, we got to talk to
you. Yeah, we got to do, we got to take care of this.
Like, we got to, went to talk to Daryl and said, we got to take care of this. My son's about to marry the wrong woman."
Yep.
And now he is happily married to the right woman.
That's right.
And let me tell you, Ronnie, you know, he was the worst player, the highest handicap in the group. And you drew him as your partner on the Sunday Calcutta just because of the way it shook out. And you coached him to a victory, which I knew there was a good chance you would. You got out of him three or four holes where he contributed.
Five holes. Yep.
And he was so ecstatic for that. He was so happy.
I think about, you know, I've won golf tournaments before. He has not likely won anything on this scale where there is an actual trophy and a photo and recognition and a decent amount of money. So I get more enjoyment out of that, obviously, seeing the smile on his face and him going and putting it on Facebook and him being able to receive accolades from people in his life who say, "Wow, you know, that's really neat." And the comments were just incredible. Way to go, Billy. You could just hear how happy people were for him.
And nobody knows this tournament is just a knucklehead golf tournament.
I know it is.
That my trophy, I glued a pyramid of golf balls together and put a Southwest Airlines plane on top of it.
I will say, Steve, you know, my past trips, my golf trips, the Ronnie 1.0, as we've discussed, you know, I was always so tired at the end of the trip, and I just would be up all night and goofing around, and golf was just something that you had to wake up and do, and you felt like shit when you had to wake up and do it. But it reinforces my sobriety and stuff, because when I go on a golf trip, and you've never been one to get after it on golf trips either. You've got too many responsibilities and you also want to play good golf, but to wake up and play really solid golf for 4 or 5 days in a row, starting off with my round at number two, it just feels really good. It feels really fucking good to show up for life, to go on a golf trip, to pay $1,000 or whatever. It's ridiculous how inexpensive it is. But to play well and to win money and to go home and not be exhausted, it just really reaffirms my, you know, my lifestyle.
The power of sobriety.
Yes.
Even those who may not, you know, technically be, you know, an alcoholic, but maybe drink too much or overextend themselves, can say, you know what, I need to think about that myself. Because we all like to have a good time. We like to be the life of the party if possible. But, you know, the bill comes due in the morning, and the older you get, the higher the bill is, the more tax on that bill there is.
Well, that's right. And you feel really good playing, while you're partying, it feels great. You know, you're staying up, you're bullshitting, it's 1:30, it's 2 o'clock, and you're thinking, all right, I'll get a few hours sleep. And then when you're out on the golf course, you got nowhere to run and hide.
Right.
You got nowhere to go. You feel like shit, and you got to try and play golf, and you play like shit, and you get mad at yourself. I've been there, done it. You get down on yourself, and you think, what a fucking asshole I am. Why do I spend so much time on this game? Yes.
I hate this game. Why do I spend so much time on this golf trip and money? Like, what am I doing here exactly? I'm going to throw something out right now, which may be I don't know if I should do this, but well, I'm going to do it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I had an idea, Ron.
Yes.
And it goes something like this.
Okay.
Potomac Cup original formula. You know what that is? That is a private Potomac Cup where you and I as captains invite people who fit our profile of golfer, and we take it back to Rocky Gap, we pay money, and we get shirts, and we play for the trophy in fall. Later in the fall, maybe in October when it starts to turn a touch nippy.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
I love it. Well, it's an invitational, in other words.
It is.
I love invitationals. I think it's a great idea.
Would you be interested in that?
Of course I would. Anything that you are touching,
anything
that has your fingerprints on it, I'm down with it.
Because that's the first Potomac Cup was invite only. And then I started building a qualifier element into it as a radio promotion. And that was good for a long time. But, you know, it takes a lot of work and effort to get a qualifier site and to recruit the golfers and to kick up the money then to pay for the uniforms. If we just get 12 guys in Maryland, 12 in Virginia, that are willing to pay the group rate to go up there and we buy the shirts, it's the same damn thing. It's a competition with shirts and it's the Ryder Cup. And we can do it then later in the fall when it's, I think, the appropriate time.
Yes, and you don't have to worry about the extras. You don't have to worry about the qualifiers and all that extra bullshit that puts that stress on you.
Or the assholes people, that qualify. Right?
Well, we've had very few of them.
Depends.
The worst was the guys up at Nemacol and feeding the tigers and the shit over the
McDonald's
fence. Throwing McDonald's cheeseburgers over the fence. When signs on every 10 feet of the fence
don't feed the wild animals.
And we got our boys throwing cheeseburgers over the fence.
Anyway, you know what? Yeah, all life experience. Let's move into your topics du jour. You want to start with the Indy 500?
Yeah, it's scheduled for August 23rd. Yesterday, Roger Penske came out and said the Indy 500 will not be run without fans. I support him. I agree with that. Everybody really agrees with that. Just like the Ryder Cup is not the Ryder Cup without fans, the Indy 500 is nothing without the fans.
Is Indiana perhaps, are they still pretty strict? Have they not given the green light? I mean, DeWine, the governor of Ohio, is letting the Memorial have 8,000 fans. Is Indiana stricter?
No, not really.
So why did he feel like he had to come out? Why do you feel he had to come out and say this?
Well, I mean, come on, Steve.
Is it a
sporting event?
Is it a shot across the bow to the state to say, hey, if you want this economic boost, don't start fucking with us?
That's exactly what it is, of course. But, yeah, I mean, and Penske, you know, Roger Penske is a multi-billionaire. People do not realize, I don't believe, how much money he has and just how incredibly intelligent his business acumen is. He's just a very intelligent guy, and everything he does is calculated. The changes he's made at the Speedway, my friends that are work there, or you know, family that's involved, they said the place looks completely revamped. It looks new. It was very tired. It was built in 1911, as we know, but he's made a lot of great changes. Now it's important to point out that the Indianapolis 500 has been canceled 6 times in its history. The 105th running, I think, is this year, 104. Yeah, 104th or 5th. 1917, with the breakout of World War One, or the outbreak of World War One. In 1918, they did not have the Indy 500. Resumed in 1919. Also, the Indy 500 did not occur in 1942, 43, 44, or 45. So that's why the first race was in 1911, but the 100th race was not run until 2016. It's going to happen. There will be people there, and it's going to happen. It's too big. It's too big, Steve, for the city.
Right.
Hotel rooms, food, everything.
Right. So I just didn't know what to make of this preemptive shot across the bow. Like, they're not really saying, hey, I don't know, Roger, if we can have any fans. It's fucking late August, for God's sakes. You know, we had
my turn to ask you something.
Yeah.
The Ryder Cup, you've been. You say it can occur with half the number of fans. You say it'll be better with half the number of fans. Tell us why. Tell me why.
I'm going to tell you right now, you wouldn't know the difference on TV. Here's why. Because only so many fans fit around the four holes that have action at one time.
Okay.
Because except for singles, there's only four holes that have fans around them, because that's the length of the train of players that moves through the course, right?
Right.
And so therefore, if you went half of that, like, there are half the fans at a Ryder Cup that are waiting four holes ahead for the
You're
train.
You're kidding me. That much.
I am not. I wish I were kidding you, but no. They sell the shit out of it. It makes a ton of money for both the PGA of America and the European PGA, and that's why they depend on it. But they sell 40 to 50 to maybe 60. It's insane. They say, they'll sell more tickets than a major, and they'll get the highest price of just about anything. And I'm not against any of that. Yay, capitalism. But it's a tough commitment if you're going to go there as a fan.
You know? I remember you said it wouldn't have been worth it if you did not have that special access on the first tee. I believe you were up somewhere where.
Well, at Medina, we had press credentials, and so I was able to go up top to this catwalk, which was like for photographers, basically. It was sort of like a balcony above the first tee, and it was really high up above the grandstands. It was a spectacular view. And I mean, it was awesome to be up there, and I sat there and I watched all the first tee shots, but it would have been a lot different if I was 20 deep to the left of the tee box on my tiptoes. I don't know what's going to happen. I hope they sit tight for a couple weeks. There were a mere 640 deaths on Monday. And the World Health Organization, I'll talk more about this later, just said, yeah, we don't think outdoor transmission really drives the coronavirus. Holy shit. Right. Now you're saying this? So this is June the 8th. It is going to be largely gone by then. And if they flush the Ryder Cup because of these fears, it'll be a travesty.
Yes.
It can't happen. Don't do it. And don't say, we'll do it without fans. It's not the Ryder Cup. You want to go halvesies 50-50? I'll be disappointed. It'll still be decent. But let's not make any conclusions right now. And I'll leave it at that. So Indy 500 is going to happen. I'm excited for that. In August, it'll be hot in Indiana, but so what, right?
Yeah, it will be hot, but so what? And something along the same lines. I know we have a lot of auto racing fans who listen to this, and I know because we get emails and messages, and a lot of people in the Midwest listen to this. Wisconsin's big Indy racing or auto racing as well as Indiana. And I am afraid of the damages that are being done to auto racing with all of this. NASCAR already was very, very bad in attendance. And these races they're running, you know, they're just not exciting, even with fans. It even shows it's almost better without fans because you don't look in the stands and say, holy shit, no one is at this race.
And they
same thing goes, I have to be fair. The same thing goes for Indy racing.
Yeah.
Indy racing is down. These gigantic stadiums they race in. They raced at Texas. It was on NBC. It got a really nice rating, of course, because it was the only thing on. But I can just picture people turning on the race, watching them go around in a circle, which to me, it's not just going around in circles. But the race was not nearly the excitement that Texas usually provides because they put a sealant up on the top of the racetrack for NASCAR to try and increase the passing and the excitement for NASCAR. Well, guess what? The sealant didn't work for the Indy cars. They were it was very slippery. So they had to run a single groove. It wasn't the best show. It was kind of one of those deals where it was exciting that it was a neat thing that it was going to be on TV, national TV. People are watching and they're thinking, well, shit, this is follow the leader. So it was one of those.
There was an Indy race this past weekend. I didn't even notice that.
There was an Indy race on Saturday night on NBC. It started at 8:00
at Texas Motor Speedway.
At Texas Motor Speedway. Usually the most exciting race of the year next to Indianapolis.
Okay. I thought they once raced open wheels there and it was a nightmare because they went too fast and they were flying out.
They did. Guys were getting killed and hurt.
So what do? They dial down the speeds or what?
No, they just throw them in the bull ring and let them go. Okay. But fortunately, you know, this was the first race coming back besides the silly iRacing. But these guys being out for so long, you know, your body has to get used to those consistent G-forces, those constant G-forces.
Yep.
So in a sense, it was a relief that it was a single groove racetrack. Because everybody lived.
They put a little tackiness on the high line to try to
for NASCAR. Yeah, to try and make
try to it, induce more passing. That's interesting.
Did not work for the Indy cars. So
interesting. Okay. Well, we'll see. When was NASCAR's peak? 2000 thereabouts?
Great question. Yep, right before Dale died, when Dale and Jeff were going at it, and Tony was coming in, and
as I recall,
Martin and all Rusty and all of them were still running and. Monstrous.
As I recall, there was a ton of stars, including the big dogs, Dale and Gordon. And it was the A-list of A-list corporate sponsors on every hood of every car, every 43 A-list corporations, right? None of these things that you see now, you're like, what is TencelNet? Oh, yeah, it's a fiber optic company out of India. Oh, that's great. I'm glad they got the money. But what happened to the M&M's car?
Yes.
What happened to, you know, Budweiser? What happened
STP,
to
STP, all of them.
Right, exactly. Yep. What happened to Hertz?
You would, You had five different race cars that had beer on them. You had Shirley Marlin would run, or someone had the Coors Light car. Then you had Rusty Wallace in the Miller High Life car. Then you'd have Mark Martin running the one of the light cars, and then you'd have the Budweiser. It was one after another.
I'm looking at the Daytona starting grid for 2000. See if I can find the sponsors. Daytona 500 Wikipedia. Wikipedia will never let me down, right? They don't have the sponsors on it. They got the makes, and they got the whatever. I'll find it. Anyway, well, from racing, you wanted to make a point about the damaging effects that no sports is having on various levels of society. Junior, high school sports, college sports, professional sports. What's your big takeaway?
My take is that it is damaging society. Sports are too big, too important part of our society and our everyday lives. And I'm not talking about just turning on the television and watching the NBA finals or the NHL, you know, Stanley Cup finals. I'm talking about taking your kids to their sporting events and watching your child play Little League baseball or lacrosse, or and being there with your friends and your family, your grandparents coming to watch, and just the incredible sense of community you get from sports. And I think there's a really, really serious damage being done, you know, underlying damage to our psyche.
That's a great point. It's the gathering and it's the commingling of generations.
And it's watching your children. It's watching your children compete grow and evolve as human beings and maybe get that hit that changes their life. That kid who never gets that hit, who just bats number 8 or 9 every time he's up, and oh shit, here's an out. We got men on second and third. We got someone on second and third. It'd be neat if he got a hit. And guess what? He hits a little blooper over the shortstop, and it scores 2 runs. And the smile on that child's face, and the grandparents, and the joy. I mean, God damn it, this is so wrong, Steve.
I know. And parents, you know, would often bitch about, oh, I got 4 games at the soccerplex. Here's the thing, you know, back when we took everything for granted, I got 4 games today at the soccerplex starting at 7 a.m. We're there all day, and it's going to drive an hour each way, and now wouldn't you kill for it?
Yes, lacrosse tournaments out here, the all-day lacrosse tournaments where you bring your pop-up tent and your fold-out chairs and your cooler, and you think, God, I got to sit here and watch bad officiating and deal with parents that are a pain in the ass and that one kid who's a cocky little fuck. They would give to do that now.
The worst part of it is nobody knows how to stand up and start again. They're all afraid. It's like shutting down was really easy. Getting up is proving to be this nightmare. These organizations are so afraid. Oh my God. Because things will only happen at the fastest pace of the most paranoid Karen of a parent who's like, we got to have these protocols. And to put these protocols in, wear masks, 6 feet apart, can't do this, can't do that. It's bullshit. It can't be sustainable. And every day we go without sports is draining of the soul of society.
Yes.
Yep. Get up and march and start. I did see where little leagues are going to start again, little league baseball, and I applaud that. But what about the rest of the sports? Pools are closed. Leagues have shut down. It's fucking June the 9th.
Yes, Steve. And the thing that just, it doesn't make, what did, never made sense to me is the early cancel. And with all of the, with the WHO and the shit that they came out with today, talking about the asymptomatic, no transmission, and all this new bullshit that we keep learning, is exactly what you said from the beginning. There is no science. No one knows. Why are we jumping the gun? Why are we doing what we're doing? Because everybody else is doing it. Where are the backbones? Yeah. Where are the leaders? Where are the people who would stand up? So anyway, you are on every day, or at least 5 days a week. And I've admired you, Steve, because you really have held back a lot more than you want to. And I know that because you think that I need to stick a little bit to, you know, to the sports or the conversation at hand. But as you're one of your most loyal listeners and closest friends, your opinions and your takes are needed. We need to hear what you have to say because you're right on. Well, and you can say, "Well, Ron, I appreciate that."
I'm saying it here. Other people are saying it. The thing is, on other platforms that I don't own, you know, other stages where I'm playing music for somebody who's paying me to play music on their stage, you got to play slightly different songs.
I know.
It is the most dangerous time in my 20 plus years of being a radio personality. It's crazy how dangerous it is. And that's unfortunate. But at least I have this outlet here in which
you do,
and
it's good. Well,
freely.
I know we only have a few minutes, but I also wanted to talk about, speaking of dangerous and this and that, the college athletics, the teams, the programs being cut by their schools.
It's devastating.
It's beyond reproach, is what it is. Why? How? There's so many. It's like bullet points. Fiscal mismanagement.
Yeah.
You know, all these different things that I can come up with, but. They build these goddamn brand new huge engineering buildings and these labs and all these giant fucking things. But Jesus Christ, we can't keep the things that are for the students, the student athlete.
All right, let me call a timeout, Ron. You're probably not going to get a lot of people sympathizing you saying, why are we building these engineering labs? Why don't you go after the lazy rivers and the 10,000 square foot weight rooms first? There's a lot of waste in athletic department budgets, which if they properly plan for a rainy day, they might not have to cut women's cross country as soon as there's a financial ripple. You know, UConn, where our friend John Ronas played golf, is probably going to drop golf. And that's because they have a football program that is the butt of people's jokes and hasn't been relevant on the college landscape ever. And that sucks a huge amount of money. They're trying to play a sport they're not equipped to. And they're going to lose other sports, and other athletic departments that haven't budgeted well are going to throw shit overboards. And this is before really, I mean, yes, they lost a lot of money from no college basketball tournament. But these colleges are losing money because they make so much money in the summer. You know where they make their money, Ronnie? Summer programs, summer conferences, all this stuff that runs all year long. And then foreign students. Foreign students pay full overpriced freight for a United States college, and they kill it. And right now, they can't take foreign students because of the pandemic for next fall.
Yeah, and that goes back to what I was referring to about what the University of Maryland keeps doing. They build a structure, and they think it's good enough for the time being, and then they have to go back and rebuild an entire department or building to entice, to compete. Isn't that? But I think this is me.
Yeah.
I think it's ridiculous. I think it's obnoxious, and I think it's unnecessary. I really do.
Is Maryland golf going to be okay? I worry.
I know. We don't know. It's going to be good because of people like me and my former teammates. Luckily, we have money, and we're going to make sure the program doesn't die.
Good.
That's what we're going to do if we have to.
I love it.
Anything else, buddy?
Don't get worked up. Life is good.
This shit doesn't make sense, Steve.
No,
it doesn't.
It doesn't, but here's the thing. I asked for a little bit of a pick-me-up from people.
Yeah.
Avenues for Hope. Here's one from Derek Hill. He says, listening to the Zabecast on my way home from the dentist, and during the episode you asked about how listeners are dealing with all the tumult in today's society. My dentist pipes country music into her waiting area. Now, I don't listen to much country music. I'm more of a classic rock guy. But I heard some lyrics that struck me as apropos for the times. Quote, God is great, beer is good, and people are crazy. You know it. Who is that?
Of course. Billy Currington. My God.
Billy Currington. I've never heard of Billy Currington.
Oh, he's good. He's really good.
God is great, beer is good, people are crazy.
Well, he's very good.
There it is for you there, Ronnie.
Well, and something and a positive for me is the amount of time I've been playing golf with my son and spending time with him. It's wonderful. But at the same time, I hate that he didn't get to go to school. So,
all right, buddy.
I want to unplug from social media, but it's hard. It really is.
We'll talk next week, Ronnie. Thank you, buddy.
All right, bud. See you.
Oh, God, that's great. He jumped the gun on that. God is great, beer is good, and people are crazy. That pretty much sums it up for me, says Derek. I shared this thought via text with a couple of buddies, and one of them responded that the live version lyric should change to "people are assholes." Gave me a good laugh. Anyway, love the shows. Keep on keeping on. World Health Organization. Asymptomatic COVID-19 carriers spreading viruses, quote, very rare. Dr. Maria von Kerkhove, head of WHO's Emerging Diseases and Zoonosis Unit, said it's very rare. And yet this was the bogeyman that dominated America. You could have it, and you could give it to grandma and kill her. That's what it was for 3 months until suddenly the record changed. Record change to now defund the police. By the way, I don't mind the World Health Organization as they learn more and do more studies, changing their tune. Maybe we didn't take their direction with the appropriate sort of restraint. But yeah, somebody said it's interesting that, you know, private financial companies commission their own studies on, okay, what is this coronavirus really? You know, I think J.P. Morgan put out a report. They hired some epidemiologists, and they said, just shoot it to us straight. How bad is this thing? And they came back, and they're like, no, this thing is not that bad. It's more like Corey COVID. It's not, you know, some great Kevin Durant of viruses. It's more like Jeremy Lin, not like Kevin Durant. And I think that's why the stock market did what it did during all of this. Is it said, you know what, this is going to turn out to be overhyped. And when it does, things are going to turn. They're going to turn pretty quick. We'll see about that. I don't know, but that's at least kind of the way it looked. So defunding the police, this is now a thing. Apparently Joe Biden had to come out and say, yeah, no, I'm not into that. Couple things for you. Even with police over the weekend in Chicago, 92 shot, 27 dead. The most violent weekend in Chicago so far this year. Meanwhile, in a single day, let's see here. Single day, I believe they had 18 murders, which was the highest single day in 60 years in Chicago. That's with police. Can you imagine without? Of course, those who would want this defund the police thing were asked. This is Lisa Bender, who I think is on the Minneapolis City Council, being asked by Allison Camerata on CNN. So, yeah, about this defunding the police. Get a load of this answer.
Action against our police department, which gives us legal mechanisms in the very short term. You know, there's lessons from all over the country, all over the world that we're looking to take immediate steps while we work toward building the systems that we would need to imagine that future.
Do you understand that the word dismantle or police free also makes some people nervous? For instance, what if in the middle of the night my home is broken into? Who do I call?
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, I hear that loud and clear from a lot of my neighbors, and I know, and myself too, and I know that that comes from a place of privilege, because for those of us for whom the system is working, I think we need to step back and imagine what it would feel like to already live in that reality, where calling the police may mean more harm is done.
Wow. Just smoothly sidestepped it. Somebody tweeted, there should be a petition to defund the police that includes adding your phone number. And when people who sign that petition call 911 for police help, it simply forwards them to a recorded message reminding them that they agreed the police weren't necessary. All righty then. God is good, beer is great, and people are crazy. Pendulum theory. It'll come back to the middle. It has to come back to the middle. At least I think it has to come back. That's a wrap for today. Thank you for downloading. Keep your head up in the madness. You and I will live our lives fully without fear, and greater days are definitely ahead. Don't forget, we've changed to Red Circle. Please, if you are a subscriber, get on over there. Close out your account at Libsyn. It will close at the end of the month. I don't want to leave you outside in the cold. Cancel out and then join at Red Circle, and I do appreciate it. Get 12 months for the price of 11. Pay all at once if you like, or month by month. Doesn't matter to me. And best of all, get an RSS feed that you can send this podcast to wherever you want it, with a few exceptions. Quality content worth paying a price for. Fair price, small price, and I do appreciate it. Tell a couple friends if they like good podcasts, and we'll welcome them aboard. Have a great Tuesday, everybody, and we will see you tomorrow.